Welcome to the audio version of Coding in the Classroom, our column in the OAME Gazette. Beza and I are seeking out teachers across the province of Ontario to talk to them and learn how they are using computational thinking for learning in their classrooms.
Welcome to Coding in the Classroom. Today we have Derek Tangredi here to talk with us. And Derek, could you just introduce yourself a little bit? Tell us about where you're from, what are you doing, and just all the stuff that people would want to know.
Absolutely. Well, first off, thank you so much for having me. Grateful to be here. Again, my name is Derek Tangredi. I'm from London, Ontario, Canada. And here I have a few different roles that I work within. I teach at Western University, mainly within the STEM portfolios and engineering capacities. That's more of my background. I also am a K-12 learning coordinator with a focus on STEM pedagogy and mathematical research. In addition to that, I do some consulting, and I run a very small nonprofit on the side, and work with. I'm very grateful and opportunistic to work with several amazing organizations in different capacities. And I only mention that because I don't want to leave anybody out, because they're the funds of knowledge that leads to many of the things that we get to do. So I would be remiss not to mention them.
So it's really good to talk to you about specifically about coding, but about how that also goes into into so many different areas like STEM, making, engineering, problem solving, and all the technological problem solving that we can do now. So like just before the podcast, before we started recording, we were talking about your kids. For anybody who does not know Mark Rober, please go just Mark Rober, R-O-B-E-R on YouTube. Go and follow go and follow his channel. It's worth it if you have kids, or if you don't have kids, or if you just like squirrels doing ninja courses or anything like that. So, and I'm also really, really interested in how this, how coding and making translates to the kids. So could you just introduce us to your kids and what they do?
Yeah, so I have two children, 5 and just turned 8 recently, so they're fairly young. And what's kind of funny is there's just so much research out around like the age of onset for STEM and coding. And now I think Columbia University recently published a document, especially pertaining to women in STEM, that the earlier age of onset that they get exposed to coding and digital technologies, there's something like 117% more likely to go into STEM fields and remain.
Wow.
Especially for women, if they had a woman mentor. And just think of, even for like the female population, like listening right now, if you're an educator within K-12 schools, you have the ability to control 2 of those metrics right from the onset. And why that's really beneficial, and sorry, I'm just going a different direction first.
No, totally.
I'm really passionate about this because like, I don't know, going to school, like going into engineering, there was only like, I think 2 females in my one course program at the time. And this is like, keep in mind, this is several years ago. I don't want to date myself too long ago. I'm not that old, but I'm old enough. And, but I remember hearing this stat, and it was published in the Globe and Mail a couple of years ago, that of the 22 executive engineering chairs in Canada, only 1 is female. And that is a problem. And I mean, like, especially as someone who was having kids at the time, I just like, it didn't sit well with me because I didn't know what I was going to be having. And yes, I ended up having 2 boys, but I didn't want someone growing up in like my household thinking they couldn't do something based on gender identity. And so just because of that, I think a lot of other students, I remember even teaching in grade 8, hearing the exact words like, oh, what, like maybe consider going into engineering. And I kid you not, quotes from real students saying, even their parents, oh, and I heard engineering is more for males to go into. And I was like, what?
Yeah.
And just dumbfounded by it. And these are preconceived notions that keep getting spewed without actual evidence or data. And so trying to demystify this for a lot of kids and letting them know that like, you can do anything. And this starts by exposure of being young. So hence your question, I'll promise I'll circle around and get to it.
No.
is changing the game of exposing them to these amazing learning opportunities. And when you do that, you just see them come alive. And in my experience, and I'm sure both of yours, even sometimes when you have reluctant learners at first, you just see what coding and STEM can do for some of these children. I found that the ones people said they couldn't make a connection with, this is where they thrived. And it's the constructivist nature of it. Like, it's a linkage. It's not one thing. I always say it's not just coding. It teaches you how to think, and it's more about the thinking construct that it does, there's elements and links to, I would argue, arts, skilled trades, mathematics, science, literacy. Everything is embedded into one thing. And it's funny, as we're having this conversation today, I just saw someone post online today who's a huge art advocate and tagged me in something online saying, hey, what do you think about this? Like, do you think we'll ever have emphasis on the arts again within STEM? And I say, they should have never left. They're inherently embedded. And if we would be doing a massive disservice to neglect like the arts and the creative components within this. And as you two know, like you go into engineering design, you're looking for how do we get creative problem solving? And you led with Mark Robert. That's exactly what he does. And he's not working with engineers. He's working with people in textiles and all different aspects of life. And he acknowledges this point of we need all different skill sets to merge together to do this.
Absolutely.
And so you asked about my kids. I have two different children. I have one that thrives in like more of the academic setting, my younger one. And my older student my older son is, he's not that to the same degree, but he's very great in terms of kinesthetic approaches. And when you ask him to build something tactilely, he's great. And that's what he needs to learn. And it's not even that he can't learn the other way, but he builds his own ontology of how he views himself as a learner when he's successful. And I think this is a big thing in education in generally. I think if we gave any, like, what is the secret to education? Can you find success for each kid that they believe they're more successful even without you? Then you've already won. Like, regardless on, like, we're talking coding today, and I think coding lends itself well to that.
Mm-hmm.
But I think regardless of the course you're teaching or subject matter you're teaching, you make anybody feel good about themselves and what they're doing, and they feel that they're being successful, you've won. That's the whole purpose of learning. So
that's like the essence of what equity should be. It's like everybody needs something different. My former chairperson said, all shall receive what they need to achieve. And that is open. So if you need, I had a sand table in grade 8, and that was what some kids needed. So sand table, well, can we put water in it? Sure. What are you going to use it for? We want to see how much less we can compact the sand. Awesome. You know, and so like, it was just like those kids needed something different, and we should be open to all of that. You're absolutely right. Like every kid has something different. We need to be able to do that. And that's the ultimate goal of the educator, is to be able to reach all the kids with exactly what they need.
I couldn't agree more. I just find like it's finding that point for each student, because everybody has something that they're passionate about and caring. Mm-hmm. Like if we transfer more agency to all kids and get them to buy in, that like it's one thing to give a genuine project to each student, but how are they going to each interpret that? And why is that meaningful to them? Even if there's choice within there a little bit in terms mm-hmm. of variety, you're going to get more out of it. And I think truthfully, when we go back to Mark Robert, that's what he does so well, is he makes learning relevant. And he's teaching the same core concepts that all of us like in education are teaching. But he's like, I even say like in our like school board sometimes, we've got to Mark Roberize this. And like, if we're teaching Pythagorean theorem, do it with the squirrels, because now kids are asking what this about. All he's doing is changing the medium. That's all he's done. He's basically doing like, you know, Dan Meyer with three-act math.
Yep.
He's kind of taken that approach and done it with engineering task and layering it in and making it funny for YouTube. But his pedagogy is all sound. No one wants to talk about that. Like, he is still doing all of this. He's credible in what he's doing, but he's intentional. He knows who his audience is. And he's like, if I'm talking about volume of a cylinder, you know what would be really cool to use? A super soaker. And so he's doing that in terms of doing capacity. And then what's flow rate when I shoot it out? And all of a sudden people, they're doing the exact same thing that another lesson is happening in another room. But now, because he's used the super soaker and actually showing it on video to figure it out, he's given them purpose for a reason to figure out why he's doing that.
Yeah.
And I think that's where coding comes into learning. It gives you quantifiable metrics in that how do you make things come alive? Yeah. And that's why I love coding. You can do something as basic for making as cardboard. And I love that. It's sustainable. It's democratized STEM, which I think we as a society need to do better at. It's not always about the tool. It's about like the construct. And But when you add some even like microcontrollers or cheap coding aspects to it, that's what makes it come alive and really even enhances it that much more. And adds, I would argue, adds more cognitive skill frame to what they're already doing. It only enhances learning. It never, I don't see it as binary every time. Like, because should we code? Should we not code? I think it's just an enhancement on anything.
Yep.
So I don't understand. I don't sometimes, or I struggle to see the logic of like, should we not code or should we code less, more? I just think it really amplifies the message and helps children understand. Yeah.
And I mean, it's just like the question, should we allow paper and pencil to do our mathematics? Well, yes, that's not a question we would ask. So same thing with coding. Not everybody will necessarily do it with coding, but like they won't necessarily use that to solve a problem, but they have it there if they want to, and some kids do. Yeah. So it's like, why take away another tool?
You know what? That's a great point. And
yeah,
it really adds like some emphasis of like the why we're doing what we're doing, which is probably a bigger purpose question later, but it's just that purposeful coding. I think we're even getting past the point, you know, when it first was like gaining momentum, at least within the education sphere of like, and don't get me wrong, I don't want to come off wrong, but like when we got into like the hour of code, this is such a great thing, by the way. So I was like super pumped. We're doing the hour of code. This is awesome. But after like a decade worth of being into the hour of code, I feel like there's still some like, okay, we did the hour of code, check. And it's this checkbox that we check off, print the certificate. Everyone's feeling happy. Things are great. But we've got to escalate past the hour of code now, because this is something that is being used all throughout the world. The skills are prominent. They're needed in careers, jobs. And like even removing coding, it's teaching you how to think and like how to solve problems. And that is, and it's instantaneous feedback, which is what I love. It's not like, you know, you think of like math class and like back in the day, you'd like write a test or an assessment and you have to wait a week to get your feedback. Like, and then by that time, somebody might not even care of what the feedback was at that point. Whereas I love coding because it's just, you're not right yet, but you can just remix or debug that code instantly. So you don't feel that, like, say if you're a quote unquote level two learner, you don't perceive yourself to be a level two learner in coding. It's just, we're not there yet. And so you're just keep going and going. Whereas other things, you feel that when you get that assessment, you own some of that. And I think it's reframing that education is fluid and we're just working on a continuum. We're just going here right now in this moment of time is where we are, but we're not stopping there. This is a roller coaster. We're just keep going. We're on the pathway. So hopefully my analogy makes sense there.
Oh, totally. Totally. Sure. Yeah. Like the, just like, I hate to say it, but it goes all the way back to Dewey.
Oh yeah.
Yeah. So I am going to put a Dewey little reference in here for anybody who has not read John Dewey. Go read John Dewey, because like he's been talking about this for, well, he can't anymore, but he was talking about this like at the turn of the previous century.
You could not put a better reference in there. I use Dewey quotes still to this day, and it's like inspiring when you like read some of them and just talking about giving the kids something to do.
Yep.
Rather than something to learn and to learn forever. And I just so resonate with that. And I think especially when we're trying to reach groups that we might not be able to, I think that's a really good course of, can we move from more of an instructionism base to more heavy constructionism?
Yeah.
And I think you'll see, and especially if we ask for meaningful feedback from kids, because that's who we're really serving in a lot of these times, like, how did you feel about this experience? Like, what did you feel? And actually being genuine about asking for that feedback, it'll come back and you'll see it and hear how they feel. And even if we remove coding for a second, you just go into like any constructivist pathway. Like, I know Thinking Classrooms is gaining a lot of momentum right now within the math lines. And why is that? Well, they're hitting on some of the high instructional practices because they're in small groups, they're using tactile math tools, they're having rich math conversations. And it's like, I found that so enlightening because, and it's kind of even when you get into any collaborative spaces or collaborative inquiry tasks, because what you know, you look at that piece of paper ordinarily handed to you, you telling me the same thing 15 different ways and times isn't going through osmosis, allow me to have better funds of knowledge. But if I can work with both of you and you give me an idea that I already didn't have, all of a sudden I'm stronger for having that one conversation or learning experience. And that's why I just feel collaboration in these like 21st century skills are so critical into where we're going.
Yeah, so there's also another like besides the agency, I also find that audience has or the product that we're making, like having an audience or having some reason to do it is huge for the kids as well. So it's like I was just thinking this morning, like, we used to have kids, oh, write a story. Okay. And then they're writing a story just for the sake of writing a story. Like, who would want to do that? Whereas, like if I'm gonna build a nice little course for the squirrels to have to go through, to make them have to really, really struggle to get the walnuts, that's what I'm doing. And I'm doing it for a purpose that can be seen, that can be heard, that can be shared. And I think that's really important about all the things that we teach children, not just, in coding and STEM.
And it's so funny, as you just said everything, I couldn't resonate more. And I just wrote in all caps, why? Like, it's the why we're doing what we're doing. And you just hit it right on the head. It was such a great way of saying it, though. Like, who's the audience? And it mitigates that conversation with kids right away of why should I learn this? Well, you've mitigated that by saying this is why, because we're going to be sharing it for this or for this purpose. Like, the intentionality is there. And I feel like sometimes kids don't understand what that is. And I research lately around, like, teachers have the best of intentions in terms of design and instructional design of whatever they is, but sometimes we fail to implicitly mention that to the kids of like what our intentionality. We know what we're doing. We've planned this out methodically. There's a good intention, but we haven't directly told them the why. And I think that's left like when they're wondering. And Ian, can I just share like a quick story? And it's about kids. So when you said the why, honestly, this is so. We did something. So I mentioned Hour of Code before. Well, one year I was teaching at Stony Brook Public School here in London. My kids actually go there now, so it's kind of ironic. But at the time we went, I remember saying to the kids, like, yeah, we're going to do the Hour of Code, but I'm so proud of the work you've done this year. And this is so genuine. They were amazing kids. Like, I can't even say enough great things. And I remember the kids saying, like, well, we can't just do Hour of Code anymore. We've done like so much stuff. Like, we're using Raspberry Pi, we're coding in Python, we're doing all these things. So we had the idea collectively, and I love that some of these ideas came from the kids of just, hey, can we do beyond the Hour of Code? And I thought, like, sure, absolutely. But what does that look like? So what we did, and honestly, I can't even say how powerful this is. We invited during instructional time parents, siblings, grandparents, aunts, uncles, whoever wanted to come, like family, friends, to come in live during our class during the day. And we were going to teach them how to code. And I
Best one.
can't, and honestly, I can't, you would be like, here's the unintended, like, outcomes that came from that. Truthfully, you could see it, you could see it on some kids' faces who were like, sometimes like struggling with learning. And I remember looking at some parents saying, how do you know how to do this? Like, we're making interactive posters, they're coding their voices. And this is years ago. They're doing Python scripts and graphing in Python. And like, their parents don't know what's happening here. And some of these, like, we have people here whose families are very successful. We have doctors, lawyers, like all sorts of occupations, though. And just seeing that, like, they were blown away by what their kids could do and they didn't know they had that ability, it reframed how the parents even saw their kid. And like, I was just hearing things like, we're just proud of you. And like, honestly, what was so cool about that is I had this one boy in my class, and I'm not going to say his name, but he was a great kid. I really liked him, but school wasn't his prominent thing. And I think that's okay to say. We're always going to have people like that. That wasn't his core focus. And like, he had very slight behavior, but like times would like get out of line. But what I noticed is after that day, I kid you not, coming back into school, it was like, I am not giving Mr. T one bit of nonsense because he put me in a good light with my family. And his family was just so impressed with what he was doing, that you could see that there was like this partnership and trust developed of, hey, it was kind of like an unintended, like, thank you. And then in turn, parents are all of a sudden sending materials to the school because we fostered, we always talk about creating communities of practice. Well, we do that just generally because now we're getting donations and what do you need? And not because I did anything, but because they were just so proud and unbelieved at what the kids were capable of by just sometimes opening your door and creating that opportunity for these kids to shine. And I just wish we did more of that. And it's not always easy, I know, But any small win like that, it goes back to the audience. And I think that's really critical. And if just, Ian, just one more, just another one, just because.
Yeah, absolutely. You have the floor.
Yeah, like it's just these, I think, I don't know. Have you ever read Dave Burgess before, Ian?
Maybe.
He's the teach like a pirate guy. Anyways, he runs a book publishing company. He wrote Teach Like a Pirate, and I had the privilege of seeing him speak one time. And I remember he gave the thing I take away from his talk still to this day, and I reference it a lot, is he challenged every like educator in the room. Could you sell tickets to your own classroom?
Yeah.
Where the big takeaway he said, he's like, oh, and not those gifted learners that are just going to pay for it just because, but yep. Could you actually sell tickets to your classroom? Like, think of it. Like, could you yep. do that?
Mm-hmm.
And you lead with that mindset, even if you're not physically doing it, but could you do that? And then said, could you create a culture of them trying to kick the door to get in rather than kick the door to get out? And I really took that to yep. heart. And I remember teaching, I'm like, you know what? We're going to teach this probability lesson. And I remember my kids again, like they always come up with the best ideas. So why not ask them? Like we're allowed to ask them how they want to learn. So I remember saying like, listen, I got this probability unit we're going to do near the end of the year. This is intermediate class. I'm like, but we could do something different. Like we could try something different. What do you think? And like, Mr. G, it'd be awesome if we could like play Survivor in school somehow. And so I'm not kidding you. We literally for probability unit played Survivor, and we taught it on game theory and like the math probability of voting out your friends within teams. And then like, there's like, but the empathy, like we linked in so many things, but we had mathematical puzzles. We had a redemption island. So everyone you were voted out, there was still a chance to come back in. We had tribal council. We're literally playing music. I'm not kidding. I have like the parchment papers. They're voting each other out. But honestly, and I can't do it justice even in this podcast, but you like just being so proud of how students ended up becoming even like better people from like the empathetic design of it, of what it meant to like be with peers and friends and who deserves to win. And they're deciding that for themselves while they're also learning the probability. And why I mention all of this, I think coding needs to be oftentimes contextualized to have meaning. So yes, we were doing a lot of coding in there and math, but it was all contextualized to have a deeper significance
yes.
that even I fully realized in that moment. And I think all learning should be more like that, to give real purpose
yeah.
and the why around it.
Yeah.
And I feel like we get a lot more buy-in from everyone when that happens.
Yeah. Yeah, it's more, it's like coding in and of itself is not very interesting to me, but what you can do with coding is what really fascinates me as a teacher. Because, you know, we can create our simulations, we can create, and our audience knows too, like there's so much you can do with it, but it's not the coding itself. Like, I mean, yes, that teaches us how to think, but that's also on the way to creating something that's going to help us.
It is. And like, I'm just preparing for this briefly, just before I was talking to both of you. And I know we've come to this in recent years, but remember when we had this big push on like educating many on like computational thinking, what this is and the why behind it, which was great. But I think now like we're at that point of more computational participation, of like the collaboration and making this meaningful now. Like that's where we're like going. And it's funny because now I say this term and it's like, oh, here we go again. He's throwing out new terms of what are these things? But it's really, you articulated of bringing this to life and like it's the purpose is greater than the product is really what we should be highlighting here. And whether we're using whatever model we're using, whether it be engineering design thinking,
mm-hmm.
and all of these things are fine, but like they need, it has to be rooted in my ability in empathy, because if there's no empathy, we're just making projects, we're just making stuff. But if you empathize with something and you're trying to solve a real need or a problem,
mm-hmm.
that have transcendence to an idea. And that's what connects with people to the why, and when they feel passionate enough to share their idea, or
yep.
they feel empowered to share with, whether it be a parent, an educator, a family mm-hmm. friend, it's look what I created and look what problem it could solve.
Yep.
That's the critical thinking I think that sometimes is missing. And at least for
yeah.
me in development, I'm trying to, with fantastic people I work with, such as both of you and others, I'm trying to hit that of, yes, we're doing this, but here's the why we're doing it. And it's not just about getting people to code for the sake of coding and printing that
no.
Certificate.
No, it's about giving the students the most opportunity to show themselves and to show what they can do. But we frequently we don't ask the students, like the kids, to do stuff, like give them that problem. So like I've mentioned it on the podcast before, like we like my last grade 7-8 class, we tackled racism. So what is it? Okay. Where does it show up? And this is 12-year-olds are thinking critically about it, and this was at the time of the mask ban in Quebec. Is that a racist law? Well, there were all sorts of opinions back and forth, but they all looked at it really critically and came up with their own conclusions, talked to people. And if we don't give the students chances to do stuff like that, like real things that require empathy and critical thinking, they're just taking your time, they're going to be kicking the door to get out, as you said. So
I couldn't agree more. And those are the big topics that they want to talk about. Like they want it to be relevant to them. And even when we're using examples, like I feel like in recent years we've made a lot of improvements with this, but like even when we're picking whether it be literacy text or whatnot, making it something meaningful and that every student's represented, maybe like their culture is represented and trying to hit something that's significant to them so that they see themselves in the learning and it's purposeful.
Like
Because
get them to choose the book.
like honestly, okay, this is just a quick funny story, but I was teaching kids before and I got advice from my teaching partner not to pick this book to read, and I still did it anyway and tried to
Oh
read
boy.
Treasure Island
Ah!
with a grade 8 class. By the way, if you've ever read Old English, it is not easy. And
Nope.
so what was so funny is I'm not kidding, we're getting through it. My class was amazing. They were so good. And because they're placating to me, they're being kind, they're not like speaking out, but I'm looking around and I'm not enjoying even reading this to them. And so I remember saying to them one day, I'm like, hey everyone, can I just be honest with you? Like, how's this going? And because they're so kind, they don't want to say anything. Like, well, I'm just cheating, it's okay. And I'm like, no, it's okay, you can be real with me. I'm like, well, it's not our favorite. And I said, you know what? I'm not enjoying this. You're not enjoying this. Why are we doing it? And it, but what even came of that was this trust of what we're, I'm like, how about we just stop it? And they could not believe that like a teacher would do, like, what? Like, we can stop it? And I'm like, yeah, like, why not? And then so what I did, I'm like, well, I obviously picked wrong and I owned it. I said, like, I made a mistake and this is what happens sometimes. Like I said, I got advice not to do it. But because I was vulnerable with them, I felt like you can't preach vulnerability and take risk with your learning and then not show that yourselves and as educators. So I did that. And then I asked them, let's pick a book collectively as a class. And it was honestly one of the best things I did. And again, because they did it, it's so funny when I look back over the career and people are like, oh, I really love this idea that you had. And I'm like, thank you, but it wasn't my idea. And it's been always like the students at the root of it. And I am okay. Actually, I'm not even okay with it. I'm more than okay with it. And I'm not ashamed to admit that they know the best outcomes I've done is by giving them a platform to share what they're passionate about. And actually both of you will like this. So I used to always incorporate like a choice board, but one was always a surprise me box. And because
Oh, that's a good idea.
And it was one of the best ideas I ever had, like truthfully, because I remember a girl came up to me and like for this math and coding assessment that we had. And she's like, hey, Mr. T, I have this different idea I want to try. And I remember she was a professional dancer, like for real.
Wow.
And so she came up to me and she's like, I want to prove these angular metrics through this game design I'm going to make. And I just thought honestly in my head, I go, oh, she's like, and she's not like your like high achieving math student. So I'm like, okay, I don't know how this is going to go, but you know when you can feel someone's passion, and she never comes up and asks me to do anything like this, and I could see it in her face. So I'm like, I'm not going to cripple that. So I'm going to let this go, and we'll check in and see how it goes. So she goes to do this one day in front of the class, and this other girl gets up, and I am not kidding you, I have to this day never seen something more crazy from a student in terms of how amazing it was. And how it blew my mind. She gets up, her one friend, she starts doing spins and these body poses of angular metrics, and her friend is doing stop motion photography and highlighting the angular metrics, proving different patterns. And
Live?
I live, literally live, she's
What?
coding thing. And I'm not kidding, my jaw is almost picking up off the floor. And I literally stopped after. I'm like, hold on. I'll be right back. And I go to get my admin, and I'm like, you have to see this right now. I'm like, okay, continue. I'm like, go again. And so we had to bring other people in just to see this. And it was so funny because like a superintendent ended up coming and seeing what we did. And she's like, you are teaching such amazing things here. But I had to admit, I said, you go talk to them. I had literally nothing to do with this, but this is just exactly what I'm saying. The power is
Yes.
extraordinarily. Matt did not connect with her because it was not her skill set. But like, why not use her skill set, the medium of dance, to get her excited? And then she thrived. And
But I just want to pause here because
yeah.
even you said I did nothing here. You gave all the opportunity. You gave all the platform to try. So you did it. You know, it's not just
No, I get
one side thing. Not everyone giving this opportunity. Not all students having this. So
them.
maybe there are a lot of students waiting to try, but they're just staying still, you know.
Creating the culture is a large part of it. But yes, I understand where Derek's coming from, though.
I just
Yeah,
wanted to be
that's
known because
amazing.
you're right. It's the students, and you're right though, Beja. I do think we need to do better and doing better at creating these opportunities and cultures. And that I think a big thing is teachers feel like, because now I'm teaching teacher candidates at Western quite a bit, and I see sometimes they're almost looking for permission to teach certain things. Like, is it okay that I do this? And is it okay that two assessments look different? Like, because like we know that different buildings, depending on what your mission is and like what is the your board's vision of what this looks like, what is your admin's vision of what the school in terms of assessment looks like, differs from school to school. It's
Yes.
hard to see consistency sometimes. And just
There
because I'm
is,
privy
yeah.
to be both at university level, in private, in public, I see this firsthand all the time, that there's a lot of mixed messages going back and forth. And because of this, people are teaching sometimes, admittedly, I'll say this on spot, scared. And they're looking for validation. So they don't want to rock the boat too much. So sometimes they don't know that, like, oh, this, can I give this girl the same mark there versus this student that did it on a paper pencil task? Are they equal? And I would say, why not? Like, and it's, I know we have documents that show us this and to illustrate this, and they're proven that we can assess this way. But to be hard, like, teaching is a very difficult job. And there's a lot of things now, even in
Hugely
years, it's,
difficult.
I don't know if you're both feeling this, but in my conversations with people, even experienced teachers, they're saying this is the hardest I've worked in 2 decades, and I'm really struggling.
Yes.
And truthfully, I'm concerned with the mental health and well-being of many educators, not just here like on a micro level, but on a more macro level. We're seeing some trends that I think are worrisome. And yeah, and it's and I think one of the nice things you about this podcast is giving a platform to hear different approaches to things, and that what coding making, digital technology, and all of these things, engineering design can really bring to the forefront for kids and for educators to make their experience maybe more positive in some slight degree.
Oh, absolutely. So one thing we've mentioned engineering a lot here, but I would like to, like, from your point of view, is how many different types of engineering there is or there are. Because a lot of people think engineers, okay, we're going to build a bridge. But
Yeah.
that's only one of the engineers.
You know, you know what? It's one. And I feel like nowadays it's even changing even more that, yeah, because when we're talking engineering, like we're looking, like I'm even seeing in recent years big trends, like philosophical sh shifts, like mechatronics is growing
Oh,
huge
yeah.
in terms of robotics and what that looks like. We have aerospace, which is more of my background and passion. And that doesn't just mean everyone hears aerospace and thinks automatically space, but that's not really what it is. It's advanced math. It's using drones for biocarbon engineering, for field mapping of, and within different disciplines. And like, you know, I love that you brought up this question, because something that gets overlooked, and like, I think the skilled trades and even like agriculture sectors get overlooked of like, oh, they're just farmers. I've heard this before.
No.
Farming on, and I kind of like get defensive of those comments because I just happen to like quite a few of them are some of the hardest working people I know. But also inside their farm, if you go in, it's a robotics factory now. Like you should check out, like there's a nonprofit education sector like AgScape, which has like, they have dedicated things about 3D printing food and the robotics involved in farming now. It would blow your mind. Sometimes it's better than we have at Western Engineering in times. And that's not a slight of Western Engineering. It's just so much credit to what they're doing there. And And beyond that, like we have civil engineering now, which is so underrated. And that's like a global thing that's happening. And I feel people are going in there with so much purpose.
Mm-hmm.
But even beyond all these engineering disciplines, you don't have to be a true, like you, the pathway to engineering is different now. And what I even mean by that, you don't even technically have to be a true engineer, like certified going through whatever university you're going through. Mm-hmm. Some people are teaching themselves computer science on their own through YouTube videos and just the power of like library cards to get, honestly, accreditation. And they can get actual jobs as computer engineers with not this formalized education. And I'm not saying that's everybody's path, but I'm saying it's an option because of how readily available information is out there.
Yep.
And while they might not be like engineers per se, you are supporting engineers in all of these different aspects. We need people who are physically like tradespeople building all these things who are supporting the engineers firsthand. And the mindset they are using, I would say, is sometimes closer to an engineering mindset. They are solving problems, doing design, testing, testing. And when I always say like focusing on engineering, it's not that my hope is everyone goes into engineering because we need everybody to be different. But could we use the thinking construct behind being an engineer? That I think would serve all of us well, taking that mindset. And one other thing I was going to actually say, that we're actually doing a really cool thing in Thames Valley right now where we're working with grade 7 and 8 students. And we are working with a company in London, Ontario called Trudell Medical. And mm-hmm. we're bringing real world engineers to their schools to teach them 3D modeling and 3D design through Tinkercad. Nice. And then you're getting them to design inhaler caps that are made in London. Like, you know, those like pediatric puffers and inhalers.
Yes.
Made actually in London. And so when we talk about building empathy, we actually getting them going through the engineering design of understanding why you would use them. When we model and simulate like them having sweaty hands. And whenever you would need, when you basically need a puffer and inhaler is in times of emergency. And often we have to design things with people who have arthritis. We put them with arthritis gloves and they can't get the cap off. And so when we talk about how effective design can actually save lives, this is what we're talking about.
Yeah.
And so it's not just enough to make a basic design. So then we get them to redesign in Tinkercad and then we bring them to Trudell and they all 3D print all their different caps. And then we test them. We do drop tests and we see where they break and we use these ultra slow cameras that are very expensive to see where the structural integrity breaks when we drop them. And then they redesign and we leave them with a 3D printer to use back at the school. So it's not just a one-off. And we've done this, I think 7 or 8 times now, the last few years. And it's just, and why I mentioned this story is the big thing that they took away was, yes, we do engineering, but we have so many people supporting the engineering behind the scenes. This doesn't happen without people on the manufacturing floor, repairing the robotics, working on the line. We have our marketing department who has to help get the message out so we procure funding. Mm-hmm. We have accounting. And the big thing that I was just so impressed with that the engineers were so grateful for the collective team because it allowed them to focus on what they needed to do well. And I feel like sometimes that is just so missed. If we always look to the top of like a figurative mountain of, I want this role, but like that's such a finite small point, the top, but it's built by everybody else at the bottom doing their part. When we find that collective unison, I feel like that's where any organizations and thing really thrive. And I think it's kind of even a message to our schools, if we're being honest, of like, where it's okay to talk to our custodians and administrative staffs and all our EAs, like truthfully, those are people supporting me that I was supporting them ever. And I will be the first one to say that. And I couldn't do my job without them. And sometimes they're not getting the same recognition as some of the other people do. And that's kind of a shame, truthfully, because they just work equally, if not harder. And yeah, so I just think it's just, I don't know. I believe in the collective efficacy and benefits of all. And I feel like when we go through these why examples, that kind of comes out firsthand and students start connecting with those ideas as well. And they see themselves as, it's okay because, you know, you have a lot of people. We did this survey before. And I think at the one school I was at, I think 78% of kids said they either wanted to be a doctor, a lawyer, or an engineer.
Mm.
And those are all amazing, ambitious goals. Well,
absolutely.
Incredible. But does that mean that it's all the best? And is that inherent? What is that pressure also like if you're not there, especially like if you don't reach those things is kind of my fear, or you find out it's just not for you. Do you consider and like that that's a failure, because I would argue it's not. And yeah, just being careful of mental health of students. And I'm just feeling even they are struggling more, even especially I see it at Western specifically a lot more now, just this unexpected pressure of from all of them. And they're coming in feeling so much stress all the time. And I'm sure both of you see this as well, probably more than I do. But I don't know what your thoughts on that.
Oh, about the stress that's on people. Yeah.
And just off notes, then while we are making students or kids, our own kids, just to try this kind of very main specific jobs, we are now looking for just the other jobs from abroad. So we are trying to get people from different countries because we are not making time to try this other several jobs. Maybe they really be satisfied, be fulfill their dreams, be happy. And actually, I think this is so important, be happy. So yeah, you're so right. I totally agree with you. And I'm so happy to hear that you're providing this opportunity to them to see the different aspects of being engineer or being this and those. So they're just not just aiming to get this proficiency, but also they are getting the skill or this knowledge of to see the background of all or the elements or the aspects of on the process side of it. So it's so amazing.
Just the opportunity to be able to experience some of the different things and maybe find the thing that brings you joy. Yeah.
That joy part is such a great point to mention as well. It's like finding what makes you happy. And basically you touched on it too, of just that people are coming here from different countries. And it's funny, we kind of look down on some of the jobs we have here at times, but in my experience working with different people, some of these people are just seeing it differently and reframing it as an opportunity. And one thing I can just say is being able to work, like I feel so privileged to like work in all these different, like I carry a lot of different hats, but I feel like all these different hats, even if they were like considered sometimes of like less prestigious, let's say, it just taught me something and created more opportunity later down the road. And it was just kicking more doors open. And I feel like reframing this is like that you can still make this, even if it's not where you want to be at the end, a positive learning experience. It can help you. And even if it's something unrelated to what you think you're doing, you can make it work. Additional context helps you. Like I've gone in so many different paths, as you both of you know. Like it's funny. I'm like weaving, but now it makes you different. Like, how did you do all these things? And it's you weave them in together because you take something that you did in the past and make that a positive learning outcome and connect it to what you're doing now. You have additional context. And I don't know. I think that's something that we can all kind of agree on. And it's just funny going back to the kids for a second. A really cool thing that we talked about. And it's a little taboo in some ways, and we didn't mean it like literally in some context, but before in school, we actually, I did this thing with students where we actually sat down and told each of them individually, like in an interview style, what they were amazing at and like what level of some level of giftedness they have in a tool. And we just recorded it. It was not meant for social media. This was not shared online because I always say the best thing teachers do or educators do is never going to be visible online. It's the conversations of building somewhat if you don't see. It's something on the yard, changing how they view about themselves. It'll never be the project you did. Well, not never, but often. And what was so interesting is truthfully, I couldn't even make it through these conversations because you're getting in this, you're looking a student in the eye who you're just so proud of near the end of the year. And like, you're just telling them all the amazing things that you see in them, and did this with every single kid. And only thing we did is we just sent it to their families. And I can't even tell you, I thought I was in trouble because my admin came in and was like, "Tangredi, I'm going to kill you." She's like, "I'm getting all these calls." And then, but the calls were just like, oh my, I had no idea. Like I don't see this person at home because you don't always see all the best things at home because like I see it now as a parent. Kids, like, that was cool. Oh, it was okay. Or like, we did nothing. And like, you don't know fully what's happening. And so I just wanted the parents to see, like, I know I wasn't naive to know that like kids aren't going to share everything we're doing, but I wanted every kid to walk away being like, wow, he sees all the, like the little details, even if it's not like you're really good at like decomposing math equations. That's not what I was telling them. It was more humanistic. And I think we're losing sometimes sight of the humanistic side of things. So I wanted to tell them the little things I noticed, like, I notice you all the time out on the yard helping these two students, and like you think it goes unnoticed, but it doesn't. And I'm like, you're such a leader. And honestly, like I'm like getting goosebumps as I'm like telling you some of these stories. And then just seeing how they reacted too was like emotional for them. And what's so funny is something that's so easy. Like, think about this. This is so simple. It would be equivalent to me and you sitting in a chair. I'm looking at you, just telling you it has to be genuine because they'll feel it.
Oh, yeah.
Just a genuine conversation of what you appreciate about a person and then what comes from that after. Do you think those people are ever honestly giving me behaviors? Like, truthfully, I will fully own this. I am not the best behavioral management educator there is out there. Mm-hmm. I don't have a program, but my program is empathy, mm-hmm. like, and treating them how they want to be treated. And then they do this themselves. Like, truthfully, if they know you care about them, don't get me wrong. Are they going to be loud sometimes? Things? Yes, but that's nature. But it goes to a point and then they self-correct because there's trust and they don't want to let you down. That's been my experience. And this is coming from, yes, some schools I'm talking to have been high achieving, but I also taught, I won't name the school, but at like the lowest scoring school in Thames Valley District School Board, and have been at a couple and chose to go. That one time I actually picked intentionally going there after doing some different roles because those kids are never picked first.
Nope.
And I wanted to create a different avenue for them of like, these kids are never picked first. I want to put my money where my mouth is. And like, I'm going there and this is going to be different. And I'm not going to tell them that. They're just going to see it. And I am, by the way, they taught me, and you know, both of you know this, but they teach you so much more than you teach them. And I
absolutely,
it's so funny because you hear these rumors of schools that people, I often like of communities, and they'll say things, you know, what public perception of some schools are at times, know, all the schools, and people will talk like bad sometimes about what it is to be there, but they're usually people who haven't been in the schools. And when I was in one, I couldn't say enough great things. I would go back tomorrow. I loved my experience there. And when people now talk and I hear negative talk about some of these places, I'm the first one. And you know me, I'm not an aggressive personality that way, but I will definitely stand up and advocate for the people who are saying negative things about these kids because they are some of the best people I ever taught and they are so grateful for every opportunity. And that's something that is just remiss and not mentioned enough.
All my best stories with kids come from schools that would be challenging for that they would be considered challenging, but they're like one of the best times I've had with students are challenging schools.
And that's what makes it worth it, right? Like that, me, that's what makes it worth it because I always looked and like I mentioned Stony Brook earlier and it was great. I loved it. So don't get me wrong. Like anybody listening, my kids go there. I moved here after teaching there. So it kind of says enough about what my thoughts were about it. You wouldn't do that if you didn't like it. My kids go there. But truthfully, I felt like I did a good job there and I feel like the kids loved it. But, and if I'm being all honest, the kids would have been fine without me there. It was a great benefit that I was there, but going to a school where you actually make a true difference and they need you, you can't like, you have the ability to alter someone's trajectory. And it was just huge. And if I know we're talking coding in the classroom, so I'll share one quick coding story, if you don't mind, about like coding greater than the purpose. So I had someone from as a Syrian refugee in my class and she came she could write a little bit, but couldn't really speak. She was like what we call like step one MLL, like so very little language proficiency. And so for Meet the Teacher night, instead of like people coming in and like being like, you know what, like let me tell you about your kid and not understanding. I'm like, you know what, everyone does that. But like, why am I telling them all about their own son, daughter? I said, why don't the kids tell the parents themselves what they're doing? So we made interactive posters with each different copper tape told a different subject and they told their families what they were doing when they pressed it. First off, families are walking in blown away just in the fact that they can even do this. And right off the get-go, but there's like, I can say whatever I want, but hearing it from their own, their own child is just so powerful. And this girl, one thing I noticed, her aesthetic principles, like again, when we're talking about art, I can't do what she did. She made this exquisite masterpiece that truthfully, none of us until she did this even knew she could do this because honestly, my program didn't lend it as well. But because, just again, Beja, what you said of lending, giving opportunity and like agency, she made this thing, she pressed it and was able to speak. And I remember her coming up just being like trying her best to basically say like, thank you for letting me do something that I can do, not being mitigated that like, I need my MLL teacher to come in here and assist me. That she was able to do it on her own. And there's so much power in that. And then again, seeing there's nothing I can quantifiably tell either of you in this podcast or to listeners listening of what that impact is, but like, because you can't see their faces, but I can just tell you when the families are in and hearing their own voices of what they are learning transcends anything that we were really doing. And the longitudinal positive impacts after that far exceed the lesson I'm going to teach them the next day. And that I think is what learning to me is really about. It's really creating empowerment and a positive ontology belief in themselves that, you know what, I actually like education and I see the real world practicality of how I can use these skills and teaching me how to think.
Yeah. Thank you, Derek.
Coding in the Classroom is written and produced by Beza Sazer and Ian Brody for the OAME Gazette. The editor for the Gazette is Tim Sibald. Thank you to Upbeat and Soundroll for the theme music.